Hello, everybody, to another episode of Coffee Overflow. I think this week we're going to talk about open source. Afif, you brought up the topic, so I'm going to like gently throw it to you, like how we're going to start this.
Right. I think we can start with telling our experience around this. But what triggered me originally about this topic was, I think last month or last 2 months, there was this... do you guys remember Faker.js? Was it Faker.js or Faker? It's developed by someone called Marak. So this guy maintains... This guy, Marak, maintains Faker.js, right? And he straight up just said, I'm not going to maintain this anymore unless like one company actually gives him a six-figure contract. Something like that. Yeah, so it was... taking Twitter into a, like, hey, you know, and you know, there's always drama on Twitter. And I felt like it was an interesting trend that I'm seeing happening in open source world. Like, people are actually, you can actually make money from maintaining open source. You don't have to even sell a separate product. You just get paid by maintaining open source libraries. So that's what, that's what triggered me to suggesting this in the first place. But I just like we're not like full-time open source contributors, right? So we can just talk about this in general, I think.
Right. Yeah, I think the community as a whole and a lot of businesses are treating open source very differently than, I don't know, close to 10, 20 years ago, right? For example, you briefly mentioned open source as a business model. It's not particularly new. Like, for example, Red Hat thrived on, like, they had, they had Fedora open source, right? Fedora is an open source code, which they use for Red Hat distributions, right? And then they sell support to Red Hat distributions. So that's like a business model of open source. I think they are like the biggest company that initially started on this business model. But let me circle back a bit, right? So nowadays, like if we develop, especially if you're JS heavy, like you'll kind of be using Visual Studio Code, pulling packages from NPM, pushing your code to GitHub. Right, you probably test your code on Microsoft Edge if you are using that. So do you see a relationship with these four ecosystems?
They are all from Microsoft.
They are Microsoft.
Yeah.
It's not from Microsoft. It's just owned by Microsoft now.
Yeah, owned by Microsoft. Yeah. So it's like all this, like even Microsoft is very much into this, I wouldn't call it a game, but very much into this ecosystem. And if you look at, like, for example, Google, right, we know when they open source stuff, it is very unlikely to be something they're using right now. Okay. For example, let's talk about a recent big contribution, like Kubernetes, right? When they release Kubernetes, I don't think it's what they use internally right now, but I think it's good enough for a lot of people outside that they start to get more involved into that project, right? And the ecosystem surrounding that. But coming back to the library that you brought up, did the author of the library mention why he was looking for like monetary support on maintaining the package?
I cannot remember on top of my head. I can probably still find the issue that he created. But, I mean, maybe he's just tired of providing free support. Or maybe something else, like, you know, became the last straw that actually broke the camel's back. Maybe he got laid off during this COVID times and then he decided that, hey, you know, just I'm already maintaining this and other people are actually making a business out of it, and maybe he thought that he could make a business out of it too. I'm not sure, but it would be fair, I would say, to actually do that from him. I think Marak, the fake library from Marak, I think I've heard this like at least 2 or 3 years ago, so he could be one of the authorities in, you know, these faker libraries. I know there are a lot of faker libraries, but he could be one of the authorities.
But you mean if he sort of like, I guess, got retrenched or whatever, means he wasn't a full-time open source contributor. Like, I mean, I know some contributors actually, I guess, work full-time for open source contribution, like a Sandra source. I don't know, like every NPM project will have like at least 1 to 10 libraries that depends on package from him. So I guess this is also one of the other model that people use for open source. They just go full time, and probably I'm not sure if he has any contract or anything, but he definitely rely a lot on contribution from the supporters, communities, Patreon, probably some. And now, you know, like in GitHub, you can actually support your certain authors and all that. So that's also one of the different model, different from what Greg mentioned just now, Red Hat, where you provide an open source project and you build your services around the open source projects. I don't know.
Yeah, I think Tailwind is using that. Like Tailwind has Tailwind is open source, right? And then the guy, what was it? Adam Watan. He actually provides like a Tailwind UI, and then there's a Tailwind Studio, was it? Tailwind Builder? I can't remember. But there are some products around his open source libraries that he makes money from. So I think that's also one of the models that people do. And I think the other one is like the Patreon example. I mean, Vue.js, the creator, even you, also has a Patreon, and people just support him there, and he can earn like, I think $7,000 a month, which is enough, I think. Or maybe more than that nowadays, I think. I'm also one of the Patreon backers actually for him. Yeah. It is an interesting trend, I would say. I know that when you say like Red Hat, those are like probably the bigger companies, but it is interesting to see that this is coming to even like those individual contributors. And I think it has all probably been assisted by all this, like, you know, Patreon, Open Collective, even GitHub's, was it called? Sponsors, is it? Yeah, so I think it has been facilitated by that. The trend has been facilitated by that, that people can actually do that a lot easier nowadays to just get contributions from the public.
I think it will very much depend on what is actually being open source. If it's a library or a package, I think this model would make more sense. Okay, so probably there's a huge, huge thing to unpack is regarding the licenses of these projects as well. I think that's one of the thing we probably can dive into later. But what I wanted to relate before was, if it's a service, for example, let's say an analytics service. I think this happened recently as well. I think this analytic company, Plausible, if I'm not mistaken, they actually were MIT licensed, and then they changed their model. They changed their licensing terms to be HBL, which sort of says, if you take the code and use it and make changes, you need to have a copy out openly as well, right? So because they didn't want other people to start using their code and to sell services based on their code, not by them, right? I think this happened. I think there was I could be wrong, but I think there was an outcry when AWS actually started hosted Elasticsearch instances. I could be wrong. Again, I could be wrong, but I remember there was like a big of an outcry because AWS suddenly they take this open core and having these services, and Elasticsearch having hosting their own, right? Now they have to compete with a very huge cloud provider, and AWS is like doing stuff internally with the code to like make it faster and better, and they're not contributing this code back because the license term doesn't require them to. And big companies do this, right? Google has a list of licenses for projects not to use. If you are under this license, they will not use this package internally. But coming back to like the whole backing, the Patreon and sponsor thing, I don't think it might not be enough. So because for me, I see these two models, right? One is you are a full-time open source contributor, but you are backed by a company. For example, like, I'm more familiar with the Ruby and Rails scene, right? So for example, there are engineers working in like GitHub. They just spend all their time working on improvements on the language and the framework. That's all they do. But that contribution does bring benefit back to the organization, because if they can get code to run faster, if they can get code to use less memory, be more efficient, it does improve the app in a lot of ways, right? And there's this other side of the spectrum where if you are on your own individual without a, like not working in a company to do this, then probably having this sort of backing is one way. But I wouldn't say it'll be enough to like, if, okay, I could be like, I'm running against the assumption where even if you are a famous library, I don't think people would donate enough for you to sustain. Like, I think you brought up even you, right? But I would say he's one of the exception rather than the norm. Yeah.
Right, that's true. I mean, yeah, I don't think the other Vue core team members get the same amount of contributions as even you. I'm not even sure if they have like a Patreon page or something like that. Like Open Collective or GitHub sponsors, thing like that. But yeah, even you might be lucky, because like, even if he's the face of Vue, right? And any success that Vue has will actually be attributed to him ultimately. So people actually just like, oh, how do I support the Vue ecosystem? Just go to even you and sponsor. But the fact of the matter is, some of these smaller libraries like Vue Router, you know, Nuxt.js, and then Vue X, I think, they actually have their own like sets of contributors, like core team members. So yeah,
I think like when you mentioned about if the contribution not enough, I know like the contributor I mentioned just now, Cindersos, so he's like a full-time open source contributor, but he also sometimes publish some small apps, well, mainly Mac apps, that he will put up to Mac app stores, and you can buy for like a couple of dollars, just one-off as a sign to support him as well. So I guess like full-time open source contributor, part-time side project to work for something that he can actually generate income for himself. So can maybe that model also works on top that's on top of the contribution he gets from the community on, you know, GitHub sponsor and Patreon.
Right. I would argue you can also do YouTube tutorials and probably get some ads commission, but I'm not sure how much would it be.
Yeah, that could be a lot.
I want to pull this conversation away from like money.
Yeah. I mean, right. It was the initial topic that actually triggered me to like made me interested to talk about, but I don't think we have to go there specifically.
Yeah. I feel that's kind of the thing nowadays, right? When we talk about open source, it feels like that. Okay, so I imagine this, right? Open source, for me, is a very pure, quote-unquote, pure thing where you've written something and you think like, hey, I think people can benefit from either this package or looking at the code, or, I don't know, this is a one-off thing I wrote, and then if people want to extend it, they can just, you know, depending on the license terms you put out, they can extend upon it, and then it's like, okay, I'll put it out there, right? I think this whole explosion, I say explosion because it definitely got magnified when like public repositories like GitHub and GitLab start coming to existence. I think previously like the Linux system and like a lot of programming languages, right, they were using other version controls, like SVN and all that. And then when GitHub come, everybody just moved to that platform, right? And then you get a lot more eyeballs when you have packages there. So yeah, that's essentially what I think open source fundamentally is, right? It's a pure thing about sharing. But when it comes to like, suddenly that's like, oh, just because it's open source doesn't mean it's free to use, right? The code is there, I can compile my own, I can use it. And it comes where the usage of this library might be like, if it's a library that people find useful and start using it, and they start getting like, hey, and asking the maintainer, hey, I need this, I need that. There's a bug here, there's a bug there, right? There's all these things. I kind of jumping a few topics here that I want to talk about. Licenses are definitely one area I want to cover, as well as like burnout of maintainers. I think it's very real because I've experienced it.
Yeah, I think that would be a very interesting topic to talk about, burnouts.
Burnout. I want to talk about a bit about that. It feels weird because I'm not a very active open source contributor as well. So some background to this. I picked up a gem, which is like a Ruby package. I saw there was a CLI package, CLI gem that you can use to interact with Jira. And then I was like, okay, I'll look into it. It started partially because of Hacktoberfest as well. And I saw it pop up in one of my recommended, and I looked into it. And I started like upgrading the package and fixing some bugs and stuff like that. But I assume nobody used it until I started getting issues in the library page. Actually, the main maintainer was kind enough to add me and my name as part of the contributors. That was very nice of him. But yeah, I started looking into the issues, and then sometimes I feel like sometimes there are issues that come where they just say it's not working. It's not working for me. And it's like, okay, can you elaborate more? And this has happened multiple times. I say multiple times, it's like less than 10, but it's good enough for me. Like, yeah, as of me today, I don't use that package as much anymore. Right. So I was like, I told the main maintainer, I don't think I'll be contributing more actively. Just remove my name, it's fine. So yeah, like for me, it came to a point where I didn't want to deal with this anymore. Partially because I wasn't actively using it myself. Right. But also there were a lot of like, it felt like I was working as a support from the issues that come in. Now, I know not all libraries experience this, not all maintainers experience this, but just kind of want to bring into context what I experienced.
I feel like the things you brought up is actually quite common in a lot of open source, but I do know that some projects, they will put in a template for people to fill up when they want to create the issues. So there are certain criteria where if you don't provide certain things that required in the format and no one pick up the issue, then the issue will just get auto-closed. And until it be brought back again, then only will the maintainers attend those issues. Or if there's no reproduction steps, then it get closed. Because, you know, no one wants to do on bugs that you cannot see.
I feel like that's more applicable towards a bigger project though. Like if you talk about React or Rails, that might be more applicable. I don't know. The library I was maintaining was very, very small. So we didn't even talk about having a template. And it could be annoying for someone want to report a genuine issue to have. Okay, I assume this, right? I assume anyone with good intentions would already have investigated enough. Probably where the template might come in useful. But I will assume someone with enough intentions will probably have a reproduction step. And if they are like kind enough, they would even have a pull request to fix the issue already. But maybe I'm setting my expectations a bit too high. But it is GitHub, right? So
yeah, I mean, the code is already open source. So it's not like you cannot debug it by yourself. But yeah, I mean, that's where the burnouts comes in, I think, when you have to do all this support stuff. That's, I mean, it's fair not to have to bother on it, right? Because in the end, you're just sharing your code and not just like, you know, trying to support people. Yeah, I think that's what happened to the Marat guy as well. Like, I just found his issue, by the way, and sounds like he was on a strike. It's not like sounds like. It's actually, he actually literally have an image of like, I think the Simpsons holding the strike signs. So he was just saying like, you either fork this library or you pay him like something to actually, maybe because he keeps getting all these support requests that he cannot handle. And he says like, hey, you know, I'm not gonna give any free stuff anymore. So Yeah, I mean to relate to what you said, Kui, like he maybe started this as a like pure intention, but given the circumstances, I think it's actually fair for him to actually do that. Because it affects his time and he's not even doing it. I mean, he has other things to do to just like.
Is this Marat the sole contributor? Why can't other contributors help?
I don't know, people.
It's like what I mentioned earlier, like, hey, I'm having issue, and that's it. Like, unless he put in measures to like close issues and that sort of thing. That's majority 60 to 80% of the time that are what issues are. Like, I'm having this error. That's about it. Like, okay.
Yeah, Long, I would argue, right? Maybe open source repos shouldn't have issues tab. Like, if you have issues, go and dig the code and find it yourself and create a PR. Because, like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like...
That's not very collaborative, though, if you do that.
I feel like there's a lot of expectations on the maintainer. No, you can collaborate.
Yeah, there's a lot of expectations on the maintainer, and there's a lot of pushing work to the maintainer, I would say. When you say it's not... I probably meant that as an extreme, like, over-exaggeration. But... My point is they could have opened a PR and contribute instead of, you know, expecting like the author to actually handle all this, you know, multiple hundreds of pull requests, you know. Like Gui mentioned, he has like less than 10 and he already felt like, hey, you know, I'm not gonna spend time to actually go and debug this for him. And it's fair for him to actually feel that because, like, you know.
Yeah, I couldn't reproduce it anyway.
Like, right, you give your time, right? And I felt like there should be... I know that there's, in the spirit of collaboration, you want to have all this, but you also have to do your part in collaborations. It's not just, you know,
I feel like maybe some users do treat like open source as free to use software, which might encourage this behavior, right? It's like, oh, I don't want to spend a lot of time working on this. I know the code is there, but hey, I'm using your library. There's this problem. Like, you're the maintainer. Go figure it out.
Yeah, that's what I'm. That's what I said. Like, pushing work to the maintainer. Free work, lah.
Right, and these maintainers like, hey, pay me. I have my Patreon, my sponsors, but you know, nobody's giving me money.
Yeah.
I was going to talk about there's another side of like being open source repo maintainer as well, where you have to say no a lot of times, and after a while, that kind of digs into you and becomes burnout as well, because a lot of people will come with requests. Hey, you'd be great if your library can do extra this thing. If you'd be great if your library can support this and that, and then like, you know, as a maintainer, you're kind of like, no, this wasn't what I had in mind. Maybe you can create a separate library. I guess to me that sometimes contributes to burnout as well. It's like, I don't have time to work on all this, right? I feel a bit bad. Like, I have to reject all these like feature requests. Like, yeah, it does make sense to be in here. It will definitely be great use case and all, but that again, I'm not working on this full time, right?
And there's also another a slightly different experience, so, but still related to collaboration, right? So I created this library for a backend framework called Feathers.js. So I created like the middleware to actually connect to DynamoDB. So they have like an adapter for MySQL, they have an adapter for like different kinds of databases. So I created one for DynamoDB specifically. So I have like, I have it in GitHub, and then I was just using it for my own project and I just push updates from time to time. And I can see that some people actually use it, but I'm not sure, like I never get any issues or pull requests, something like that. But then one day I decided to check the fork counts because I saw that there's like, you know, at the top right, there's going to be the fork button and then like how many forks you have, right? And then I clicked that fork counts and I saw that some people actually forked my library and made their own changes, like fixed some bugs that I know is there, but I didn't have time to actually like look into it. So they fixed those bugs, but didn't actually contribute it back to my repo. And I'm like, why? So they just go and push their own NPM package. And I was like, so it goes back to the collaboration that you were talking about, right? Like, I am more than happy to actually merge it with my changes, like, because I need those bug fixes as well. But they go and create their own library. So if I want those bug fixes, I will have to use their library, which is, you know, or I can all...
You're the author of the... You're author of the original library, but you have to use a fork.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind that, lah, but it just feels like there's some awkward collaborations going on. Yeah, and that there's a lot of challenges in open source, lah, I would say.
So one reason why... I know one reason, one partial reason why people don't do this is because of the licenses. It could be... It depends on the main license. For example, your license, right? I assume it probably something very open like MIT or something like that.
Right.
Because it's MIT, maybe they had to create a fork that they have to use inside that couldn't use MIT. For whatever reason, couldn't use MIT. It's very rare this case happens, but there could be this reason, right? It's possible. But again, maybe some people is like, well, you're not that active in maintaining... like. That's also the assumption where if I look at the repo and it's not very active, I'm not sure my PR will get merged or not. But I guess there's nothing like stopping them from actually raising a PR.
Yeah. I mean, that always happens, right? Like recently in my company, I had to look into like some Jenkins issue. And so the issue reporter actually created a PR to the Jenkins plugin, the EC2 plugin. But he didn't actually have to wait for them to merge. He just used that forked version in his own company's Jenkins, you know, to get the bug fix faster. And yeah, I mean, like you said, there's nothing stopping them to actually at least push back that bug fixes, you know, so that everyone can just get the benefits, I would say. Yeah, people are weird.
I actually experienced what Gray mentioned, the second point, where like I raise a issue, raise a PR for some open source, very niche open source library, and the maintainer has tons of repo for some reason. I mean, but they are not being actively maintained, right? I just let the PR live there for more than half a year. So it never get looked at. I just like, I'm just gonna delete my fork and then you guys do whatever you want with the PR, just close it, like, whatever. it happens. People like open source asking for contribution, but they never actually attend the PR day. They get
it could be just the reason that just burn out. They're just not looking at PR at all.
Yeah.
I mean, so from that point of where, right, whenever I think of contribute to like make a PR or something, I was just check how active the project is. If there's nothing being done before, I won't even bother to create an issue. It's like,
yeah, it's very unlikely. It feels very unlikely that the PR will get merged, right? Like, oh, it's only active. Last commit was 2 years ago.
Yeah, like last issue created 1 year ago. Whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I feel like we barely scratched the surface, like on all the open source movement. I know there's like a lot of licensing things I'm definitely interested to talk about because it's a mess. Like licensing in open source is just weird because there are people who want to share their code, but they don't want they generally want people to merge all their contributions back, right? And then some people is like, hey, I put this up, this open source thing, but you can't use it for like commercial activity and that sort of thing. They even have some libraries do have like a separate commercial license if you want to buy more stuff and all. That's one thing I think we want to talk about. Another topic, probably maybe in the future we might talk about, is how important is open source work in portfolio, right? I think you mentioned about like, hey, you contribute some stuff for portfolio, but I feel like that's that's a can of worms to talk about.
Right. I mean, some employers actually ask for that. Like, yeah, and they actually put it obviously on the, I mean, they put it explicitly on the hiring pages saying that, oh, if you have open source contributions, it's actually a bonus, something like that.
Yeah, if it's a bonus, if they treat it as a bonus, I think it's fine. I feel some do like treat it as a mandatory thing, or at least whether you have it or not does make a very big difference. But yeah, maybe we'll talk about it in the future because I have opinions.
I mean, this is just like, I guess like you need to contribute to get something, like, you know, Hacktober. Like for the t-shirts, as long as you contribute, God, you get things.
Such a, it feels weird, like if you ask a doctor, hey, do you have a side business, do you cut people open up on the side, they will be good in your portfolio. Feels weird. But yeah, I feel like we barely scratched the surface this time around. Maybe we can talk about it more in the future. Definitely interested to explore a lot of areas regarding open source. Like, it's such a huge thing to talk about. Yeah, I think we can wrap this up. Well, open source is hard. People are weird. That's what we learned.
Yeah, and there are a lot of like we said, there are a lot of intentions going on behind someone actually pushing their work to open source as well. So yeah, you just have to deal with the complexity of humans in general. Basically,
it's quite literally a huge social network, right? GitHub,
GitHub
is like a huge social network.
That's true. So you have to deal with all this.
Yeah, we're gonna start seeing stories in GitHub soon.
Oh no. Okay. Yeah, I think, you know, definitely feel like we barely just scratched the surface of this. But yeah, definitely if we talk about this more in the future, that'd be nice. So I know we've already decided what we're gonna talk about next, which is we're gonna talk about 2020. Wrap up the whole 2020. I'm sorry everybody, we have to acknowledge 2020 exists, even though with the COVID pandemic and all. Actually, surprisingly, while I was like taking down notes on like what happened in 2020, surprisingly quite a few things happened in 2020 as well. So I'm looking forward for us to talk about that next round. Any parting words?
Don't let your copy overflow.
Please like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe, yes. Yeah, we don't have plans to expand beyond YouTube right now, but yeah, let's see how it goes in the future. I'm just lazy right now. All right, thanks everyone.
Hope you enjoyed it.